one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Come out. Phillies take another series, this one against the Colorado Rockies at Citizens Bank Park. Four series in a row under Don Mattingly, the greatest manager who ever lived. And so we will talk about the stars of the series against the Rockies. And, you know, hey, listen, not a lot of bad stuff to talk about with the baseball team. All of a sudden, incredible to think, this is the same baseball team that a couple of weeks ago lost 10 games in a row. Same season. Yes, we're going to, after the Phillies have this parade this year, we're going to look back on April and see the 10-game losing streak. I'm sorry, I'm just being silly. It's not.
What
I'm
are you
doing? I'm not actually going there. No. But joining
and
me
yet.
Here on... Not yet. But joining me here on the roundtable, Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. Justin Clue, of course, is from Baseball Prospectus. He's the author of the book Summer of the Cheap Wieners. You can follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. And if this is not enough Justin for you, you can also listen to the Patreon podcasts that he hosts, Absolutely Hammered and The Dirty Inning, over at the Hit and Season Patreon. Justin, how you feeling, bud?
Speaking of which, it's going to be sort of an outdated episode. Well, I guess they're all pretty outdated.
They're all outdated. What are you talking about?
It's going to be thematically outdated in that we did an episode we're going to record this week on the 1999 losing streak. That was the comparison to the Phillies' 2026 losing streak. That is now such old news, it's going to sound like we're going out of our way to be super negative about the team. But that's kind of what we do at the Dirty Inning, and I think we'll find a way to enjoy it regardless.
Yeah, that's generally speaking how it goes over there. You know, it's where it's... the Misery Loves Company podcast. That's really what it's all about. It's a beautiful thing.
Plus, you know, you can look back at Phillies history and point to, and there'll be endless debate depending on when you were alive, but you can point to the best, see the worst season, blah, 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 blah. There's all these other, like, emotions you can feel outside of anger, sadness, and happiness, which is largely how these are siloed into. There are the Philly seasons that are, like, the more peripheral emotions, like disappointment, a subgenre of sad. 1999 is one of those types of, it fills in one of those sub emotion years in that, like, the disappointment of this 1999 team is just coming off the page of every newspaper covering their exploits, especially near the end of the season when they underwent this losing streak. So thankfully, we're not talking about a Phillies team going through a losing streak this week. We're talking about a team doing the opposite.
Yeah, not this week, and certainly never again. Under the greatest manager of all time.
If there's anything I've been more sure of, I'm not more sure of than ever, it's that the Phillies will never lose like that again, for sure.
Right. 100% correct. Liz Rocher is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. Follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Hi, Liz.
Hi. Hi. Hi, John. Hi, Justin. How are we all doing? It feels really weird to be talking about the same team that we were a few weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Same group of guys, same players, same profile.
This might have been the series that locked
how baseball
in
turns.
That they were just a better playing team.
Yeah. Was that Justin?
Oh, I was just saying this might have been the series. You could just hear it in the coverage that, like, this was the series that I think got people to feel like this team had kind of relocked in a new way.
Yeah.
I think that the corner has been turned. It feels like.
Well, yeah, I mean, so they took care of business against this weak part of the schedule that everybody has been looking at, or at least the first two-thirds of it, right? When you had three-quarters of it, when you were playing the Rockies and you're playing the Giants and, you know, you're playing the A's, and now you've got the Boston Red Sox coming up in Boston, so it's a little bit more challenging this week. But the Red Sox have not gotten off to a very good start this year. But the Phillies, it didn't look great on Friday, the first game against the Rockies, where they they're getting their doors blown off 6-0, but mounted a really strong comeback and lost an extra innings, but then won handily on Saturday and Sunday. And Sunday's win, really, the 6-0 win, really did feel like, okay, this is the World Series Phillies. Like, this is the formula. Now it's against the Rockies. So, again, you got to do this against better competition. But when you got Christopher Sanchez throwing, you know, seven shutout innings in this one. You've got two homers from Kyle Schwarber. You've got Bryce Harper going deep, right? I mean, this is how this Phillies team was built to win. Like, the stars were starring, and that's kind of how it goes. And then You know, you had a lot of heroics from other players up and down the lineup. Really, now everybody is starting to contribute. The players are getting hotter again. They're starting to get a little bit more batted ball luck. The pitching is still a little up and down. Was a little up and down in this series, especially with the starters. But let me throw this out to you guys, because I think there were a lot of different players that you could point to as being the star of the weekend. Liz, who was your number one star from this series against the Colorado Rockies? Who in your mind left the biggest impression, biggest star, best weekend, however you want to put it?
Well, I will leave the obvious choice to Justin with his he's the number one fan.
So I don't know. I'll choose.
I wonder. So I'm a little bit torn, but I'll pick Kyle Schwarber. Maybe not the ultimate star, but his home run rate is definitely going up, which is what we like to see. He hit home runs in two of the games, two back-to-back games. I think he hit, what, four in the series, including two in one game. Like, it was a nice display of Kyle Schwarber's offensive capabilities. And his batting average is up to .227, folks. I feel like that's a plus. We're out of the hundreds. We're above 150. Let's keep shooting for the stars.
Yeah.
And I mean that truly. I'm not trying to be facetious or sarcastic. Like, Kyle Schwarber provides something very valuable to this team that they have, it seems like, a hard time with otherwise. Like, Schwarber is their big home run engine. And, you know, anything beyond that to me is like gravy. And so if he could get his batting average up to even like .240, .245, that's really productive for a home run hitter like him.
Yeah, when he's had great seasons before, big home run seasons, that's typically where he's been at. And frankly, last year, he had a little bit of a batting average slump towards the end of the year. The average was back down to around like .260 by the time the year was over, because he struggled against lefties a little bit in the last month of the season. But, you know, two home runs on Sunday, he's homered in four straight games, which ties a career high, and tied with Aaron Judge for the most home runs in baseball. He's got 16, on pace for 63 home runs. And, you know, he's got a top 10 OPS in baseball, even with the batting average down that low. So, I mean, you're right. Kyle Schwarber does, you know, he does something that really no one else on the team can provide, but really no one else in the league outside of like Aaron Judge and Matt Olson can provide, like that consistent 50 home run power every season. Like, I thought maybe, you know, Schwarber takes a step back in the home run department this year. Doesn't look like it. Doesn't look like that's going to be a thing. He is just as locked in right now as he looked like he was for most of last year. So I think that's an excellent choice. And now we'll go to Justin for who I can't imagine who Justin is going to point to as his star of the weekend. So I shall open the floor.
Was it last year at the tailgate? That guy came up to me and said he would trade Brandon Marsh for a sack of hammers. Well,
that sounds like something I would say. Yes, that's right.
And this was like after this was Brandon Marsh, I don't think, was even struggling when he said that. It was like while he was coming out it might have been when he had gone down to the minors and like corrected himself and come back hitting like much better and had that like 0 for April or whatever. And yeah, at that point, I could see being completely exasperated. But you look at some of these up and down the Phillies lineup. You point to one guy somebody hasn't completely given up on, or that we haven't completely given up on at some point, who found a way to, except for Max Kepler, found a way to like make you eat crow for that. Even Stott, whose success this season I, you know, would not have. And I'm calling it success even still with him having not been even one of the biggest factors in this series, just because you expect a flat line for so long and then you start seeing spikes. I mean, it's great. But in the case of Brandon Marsh, I feel like you've seen so many long stretched out examples of what he's been able to do since coming to Philadelphia. There have certainly been rough patches for sure. And there are certainly gaps in his game, well documented. But look at what's happening. Brandon Marsh has the highest batting average in the National League. If it ended today, Brandon Marsh would be the National League batting champion. So
Crazy. That's
got to mean something. I mean, I don't know what kind of hammer this guy was imagining, but I hope it could hit 500 in the month of May, because that's what Brandon Marsh is doing.
I mean, a .353 batting average after 4-for-4 on Sunday. I mean, it's not like he's got like
a
3-15
hit streak. Then he came out and hit four hits in a game.
How is he still hitting? I know.
And you know what?
It's really
15 out of 17 hits this month have been singles. So he's not even hitting like tons of extra bases, but he's doing his job. You talked about Schwarber being the big home run engine. He is the little singling engine elsewhere in the lineup who is doing his job, getting on base, showing at times why a walk is not the same as a single, and that a single can knock and run. So he can do that. You got runners on base, he can move them. You got nobody on base, he can get on base. I mean, he's doing what he's supposed to do. And I'll throw this out there too. I sure haven't heard any calls for Kevin Long's head on a platter in a little bit now, when that's all anybody could talk about. And you know what? Jim Salisbury said Marsh was talking about what's behind his success this year, and he gave credit to, first of all, the coaching staff. So it's really funny how nobody's going to remember that Kevin Long is being credited for one of these huge Phillies offensive success stories, but that's not a topic anymore, obviously. Here he is getting credit from the player himself. So, yeah, look at these coaches and the older players he was talking to the veteran players on the team, picking their brains about starting pitchers. I mean, that's exactly what you think you're going to hear from a guy having the kind of success Marsh is having. But these were the guys we were calling lifeless and sad out there. And I'm not saying they didn't look that way, because they definitely did. But there's a lot of, you know, furious kicking behind the scenes in an effort to correct what was going on in Philadelphia. The same kind of kicking that I'm not sure is happening in New York with the other sad NL East plummeting narrative. Yeah. So it was nice to see that, like, yeah, even when things were bad and you didn't really want to hear it, like, this is what we're trying. You don't want to hear that when things are bad. You just want to see something work. Well, now things are working and you're hearing how that approach was filtered through the struggles this team was having. And it's just good to hear that, like, yeah, these guys are still talking to each other about the game and the competition and trying to improve each other and make the adjustments they need to make. And a guy like Kevin Long can still have value, even if some guys in the biggest names in the clubhouse are at a point in their careers where maybe they're not as open to instruction, but I feel like a lot of them are, because the Kyle Schwarber is a big Kevin Long guy too. So yeah. There's a lot of, I think that you're seeing some value proven here from a guy people are so easily ready to just like dismiss as soon as the batting averages start dropping. But aside from that, it is just fantastic to see Brandon Marsh playing at a higher level than we've seen him play. And he's already played at some pretty high levels for stretches over time. I think you're going to look at the top 25 batting average in the National League right now and see a lot of guys in there that you're surprised to see. You're going to see Marsh for sure. That's going to surprise some people outside Philadelphia. But like Troy Johnston of the Rockies is in there. Nick Gonzalez of the Pirates is in there. I think it's somebody else. Mickey Moniak is in there from the Rockies. And then you look at you cross-reference that with the batting average on balls in play, and you see a lot of those same names that you're surprised to see. So what I'm saying is regression. Sure, it's bound to happen. But I think we're seeing the ceiling of Marsh's game here, and that it's only gotten higher as the years have gone by. So he may not play the biggest offensive role on the team, but when you're hitting consistently, you can very easily become the biggest offensive contributor on the team, even if all you're doing is hitting singles. So I love what we're seeing from Marsh. I see no reason to think it's going to abruptly stop anytime soon.
Well, he's been hitting this well, maybe not quite this well, but he's been hitting well since May of last year. I mean, we're talking about a full calendar year now of Brandon Marsh being a very, very productive Major League Baseball player. And so far here in 2026, playing like an all-star caliber player. Even when the Phillies were going through their struggles earlier this year, he was one of the few guys that was actually still hitting. And, you know, I think there's two factors here. One, he's using all fields. If you look at his splits between pull, hitting up the middle, hitting to the opposite way, it's almost split even among all three of those different spray areas. So that's one thing. The second thing is a massive decrease in his strikeouts over the last 2 years. He had been at 30% or above strikeout rate in each of his first four seasons in the majors. Last year, he got it down to around 26%, which is one of the reasons why he had a more productive season last year. This year, he is striking out 20% of the time. That is 10% less than 2 years ago. Folks, that is a massive shift. That is a huge number. And he's playing more against left-handers now. But part of what Brandon Marsh's struggles were was getting bat to ball. When he's getting bat to ball, he generally speaking hits it hard somewhere, hits it well somewhere. And we're seeing him more selective at the plate, not striking out as much, and as a result, being able to use all fields and getting a lot more hits. And he's playing good defense in left field, still not the best in center. He's a left fielder. Really, that's where he should be. He can give you some value out there in center, which is perfectly good. But right now, playing like an all-star outfielder. I mean, .353 batting average, and then going back to last year, he's well over .300 over the last calendar year in terms of batting average. you know, we might just see Brandon Marsh hitting his prime and playing his best baseball right now. And it's really tremendous to see. It's fascinating and exciting to see.
In the month of May, he's got 28% of his batted balls are line drives. Nobody else in the Phillies even has 20% line drives. Wow. So he's just, yeah, he's just coming into his own. And he's proving as valuable as I think the Phillies imagined he could be when they acquired him a couple of years ago.
For Logan,
I don't want to hear anymore. Let's trade him talk, because you trade a player you don't need. The Phillies need Brandon Marsh. They needed the little engine that could in the lineup. They need some guy to actually move the ball and not be afraid to hit it somewhere. Like, I don't want to hear anymore. Let's trade him for stuff that will be less valuable than him. I don't like that, because he is one of the most valuable players the Phillies have right now, if not the most.
Now, what if there's a bag of hammers out there that seems really good? You wouldn't even trade him then?
Depends on what kind of hammer.
Yeah, I know there's how good are the hammers?
A fancy, fancy hammer out there that goes for a couple hundred dollars. If there was like a bag of those,
it's got to be a bag.
It has to be a bag of them. I don't want a pallet. I don't want a case. No. I want just like literal burlap sack of hammers.
I think a lot of the trade talk came from the fact that, and this is a testament to Brandon Marsh again, the prolonged nature of his positive contributions to this team, because when nobody else was hitting, Brandon Marsh was, and you were like, well, I guess if we're doing this, then Marsh is getting, like, then the trade talk kind of makes sense as long as you're, like, being a doomer and willing to give up on everything before May. That talk was already starting from me. But that's, like, that was just also a testament to where people's heads were at that point. The Phillies weren't good then. Liz, now they're great and things are going to be fantastic and we're all going to live forever. So there's nothing to worry about.
Right. For my hero of the weekend, I'm going to go to the young man who has been at the center of my ire for a lot of this season and Phillies fans.
It's
ire.
Me, isn't it?
Listen, what?
it's me, isn't it?
Justin Clue is the hero of the weekend. I've given him a rash of nonsense.
Gotten a real raw deal from you, John.
Finally, he did something this weekend. Now, let's talk about Alec Bohm, guys. Let's talk about what a turnaround. I mean, again, you want to talk about Don Mattingly as the greatest manager in baseball. This man just knows people. Knows when to sit Alec Bohm.
You have to stop this.
I'm sorry. I can't help it. No, but I mean, hey, listen. He sits Alec Bohm for 2 days, right? On Thursday and Friday. Gets him back into the lineup on Saturday, and in his first two plate appearances back in the lineup, Alec Bohm pulls two home runs deep into the left field seats. After Elmo makes an appearance, yes, the Muppet from Sesame Street,
God.
Elmo.
How did we not talk about? I forgot Elmo was in the booth.
I can't believe we talked about
that. That's why I'm talking about this, because I think really, when we look back at the season and we see Alec Bohm with a .280 batting average, 25 home runs, 35 doubles, and a wins above replacement of around 2.5 or 3, we're going to be able to credit Elmo with all of it, because the turnaround happened after Elmo visited John Kruk and Tom McCarthy in the booth and said, Elmo wants to see home runs. What did Alec Bohm do? Minutes later, sends, for only the second time all season, sends one deep into the left field seats. Like, it's as if he heard the clarion call and responded. And, it's great to see Alec Bohm take these 2 days. I don't know what he did during those 2 days. I know he didn't do any batting practice on Friday. Just totally checked out. Or maybe it was a Thursday. He totally checked out. He didn't do anything pregame or anything like that. He was back on the field taking batting practice on Friday, but was not in the starting lineup, and then was back in the starting lineup on Saturday. Whatever it is Alec Bohm did, it worked. At least for these two games, it worked. Getting a mental break, you know, being able to sit. And on Saturday, he went 3-for-4 with 4 RBIs, including those 2 home runs that were Elmo-inspired. His first homers since opening day. It was his 5th career multi-home run game. His first since April of 2024. It was his first 3-hit game since last September when he had a 4-hit day in Arizona. He said after the game, if you're going to draw it up, I guess that's how you draw it up. And I think that's absolutely right. And then on Sunday, continued to be productive, went 1-for-3, had an RBI and a run scored, continuing to contribute in a small way. So just a really encouraging weekend from Alec Bohm, who's going through it. I mean, there's just, look, off the field and on the field. I don't know how much the off the field stuff is affecting the on the field stuff, but it's got to be affecting something. I'll just say it would affect me. I think it would affect me undoubtedly. But at the same time, you know, you have to, you know, a team is relying on you to be productive. And if you're not producing and it's having a negative effect on the team, the manager has to make a call. He has to get a player. It's not fair to the rest of the team. It's not fair to Edmundo Sosa, who would get some of that playing time, to continue playing a player who was having his tough. It's frankly not even as fair to Alec Bohm to allow him to continue to wallow in struggles the way that he was. So again, not knowing everything that Alec Bohm did during those 2 days where he was able to kind of not worry about playing, not worry about producing, it was kind of thrilling to see him respond the way that he did on Saturday with that multi-home run game. And just for the sake of him and the emotions and for hopefully it getting him on the right track, he's my hero for the weekend. I think as much as I am, as down as I am on him as a player, and I've never been the biggest Alec Bohm guy. I think there's a real hard ceiling on how good he is. And he too often for me fails to hit that ceiling. This was great to see. It's a great story. I hope it springboards him into a productive 2026 season now that we can all look back to, kind of like we were talking about with Brandon Marsh now, going 0 for April. Maybe Alec Bohm's 0 for April and early May becomes a storyline that we look back on at the end of the year after a productive season where he's doing what Alec Bohm is capable of doing.
It's very funny that a guy who was part of a group that had to come forward and say, stop calling us daycare, was more motivated to hit a home run by Elmo than anything else. That's pretty cool.
Incredible.
But no, in all seriousness, there's an answer to your question, John, I think, like what he did. Todd Zielecki was talking about it, and he was saying that one of those two off days Bohm got, Mattingly told him, don't pick up a bat. Don't touch a bat. Just leave it out of your hands. Just you're doing like other things that day, you know, and that apparently was enough of like cleansing the mechanism. Like that was something that he said worked pretty positively for him. And to a greater extent, Turner said something similar. Like we didn't see a huge like output from him, but he said like, I think he kind of backed off. So like he was saying, he typically takes BP inside in the cage when he's out on the field taking it. You can usually assume he's working on something. And in this particular case, instead of even doing that, I think he had like backed off the amount of pitches he was willing to see. And it was in an effort to kind of do the same. So, you know, as alarming as it is.
He had a 4-hit day on Saturday. After not taking any batting practice. Right.
Right. So like as alarming as it is to see some trends, like migraines suddenly become a very prominent issue in the Phillies clubhouse. The trend of, hey, let's maybe take like a mental break here and see if that helps with any kind of reset, helps with the pushing and like what's crushing yourself and everything, going out there, trying and putting pressure on yourself. Let's just, you know, fresh mindset, put the bat down, take 24 hours and come back. And I mean, look, the results have been fantastic. And you know, they took the cover off the Don Mattingly pool, and I know John cannonballed right in there. Liz and I are more like dipping a toe as time goes by. But I will say that when you talk about managers and what do managers even do, as becomes the topic when a team changes managers, this is a great example of something a manager can do. Like every manager is going to write a lineup and have an office and, you know, be more of a player's manager or a manager's manager. You know, there's certain broad things that every manager is going to have to do just day to day. But this is like something, not every manager is pulling a guy aside to offer advice or just say like suggesting something. And this is something a manager can do. I don't know how many times Don Mattingly has suggested this to the players and they've ignored it or they've tried it and it did not work, but it was something that worked in this particular case. And it's a good little footnote on what is just a new era for the Phillies offense.
And Liz, as a formerly great hitter, maybe Don Mattingly's advice carries a little bit more weight than I didn't like what Nick Castellanos said about not listening to managers who have never played before and all that. But you know what? Maybe with something specific like this, when a hitter is slumping, maybe a player like Alec Bohm is more, and Trey Turner is more willing to kind of consider the advice from someone like Don Mattingly, who was a great hitter in his day.
I think that does have something to do with it. I don't think it has to, you know, I don't think it, you know, diminishes the respect they had for Rob, but it's also about, you know, who they're going to listen to, not even listen to, but who they're going to take seriously. you know, they get a lot of advice and they have to rank it in their heads. And you would think that the advice of Mattingly, a formerly great hitter, might rank above Thompson, who was not that type of guy at all. I don't even know if he was in the majors at any point. I don't remember. But
I don't think so.
I could see that would be a big thing. You know, Mattingly is saying, I've literally been where you are.
Yeah.
Like I've been in your shoes, actually. I know how it feels to go out to, go out to taking a bat and have it be like it's the first time you've ever done it for some reason, you know. And I think that really impacts the Phillies a lot. They're going to take advice from him, even if it's something as simple as don't touch a bat today. Like, that's actually really valuable advice. You know, it's good advice for anybody if you're stressed about something. Like, take a day if you can and just back off. Clear your mind and don't think about it as something that you have to do today. And it worked. Like, I like that. I don't remember which one of you said it, but like clearing his mechanics. I think that was Justin. Like, it was enough to reset Alec Bohm's mechanics for a day that he could reapproach it with a different attitude. And I don't know. I mean, maybe that's something Thompson would suggest. But again, I don't know if they would take it as seriously as they did from Mattingly.
Yeah, I have a couple of parallels to this because I'm not an athlete, never been a really good athlete. I've never been a good golfer. But in the times when I did used to play a little bit of golf, I always found that I kind of played my best round of golf after I hadn't played for a while. You know, like I took some lessons, you know, enough to like know how I'm supposed to hold the club, how I'm supposed to address the ball. But, you know, it never was any good. But I always found that I had my best rounds when I hadn't played for a while. And then if I'd played like again in like 2 weeks and then like another 2 weeks after that, the few occasions when I would kind of bunch my play together, I got worse as time went on. Because then I start thinking, you got to keep your shoulder tucked in. It's like, oh, now I can try and access a little more power here. Nope, don't want to do like, and then I'm away for a while. And it's like, I come back and it's like, I totally forget about all that stuff, you know? And I'm just like, I'd play a little better. It's not much, but it's a little bit better. It's almost the same thing. And you guys are both writers. When you're like writing and you feel like you kind of get into a rut and you just can't think of any good ideas or your creativity kind of disappears. I have found, you know what? I need to stop writing for a couple days. I need to get away from it. I need to stop worrying and thinking so much about creating content. Like, how am I going to get some content created? How am I going to get creative content out? And just stop thinking about the things that I need to create content about. And then you can kind of sit down and a lot of times you approach it with a fresh mind, fresh ideas. It's not apples to apples, I'm sure, with being a major league hitter, what I'm describing. But the mental aspect of it is, yes, get out of your head, get out of your way, get out of your habits, and just kind of hit a reset.
I think it would be great. Anytime the Phillies are losing the way they were losing a couple of weeks ago, and they just shut it down for a couple of weeks and just go on a little bit of a hiatus. I think that's a fantastic idea. Just, you know, remove it entirely. Let us take a break and then come back sometime in June when the weather's hotter and the ball's flying off the bat a little better. I think that is fantastic.
Let's go to Dorney Park.
Teams should be able to take vacations. Come on.
Every team should be given a three-week hiatus to use at their discretion throughout the season.
Whenever it's a long season. Why are we
more can we give them? We are to give them 3 days off in like sort of over the middle of the season. We give them some of them get even more days off because they're not good at baseball.
Right.
Are you hearing us?
They're not good at baseball and they don't play in the All-Star game. They're not good. So they get an even bigger break. What more could we give them?
Collective bargaining coming up. Time to work some new stuff in.
Don't
feel like that's
not
going to
be contentious enough.
Yeah. I mean, don't get so locked into the salary cap situation that you're ignoring the real issues at hand. Vacations for players. Come on.
People are going to love this.
Yeah. Yeah. The Players Union is looking for strong voices, I think.
They're looking for new stupid ideas that they can put in their first draft to get to MLB. Because that's always when you give your first draft of a proposal like that, or MLB gives it to them and they send it back with all the things that they want. it's always supposed to be pie in the sky. Your first offer is never the best. It's your ideal of what you want. So they're looking for a lot of ideas that they could shove in there and then easily remove because they're nonsense. And I think you've got something going.
There you go.
Three weeks off for when we're just not playing our best. I feel like that's that fits right in there.
Guys, I need a mental break.
Fans are annoyed.
Yeah. All right, so we each discussed our own star of the weekend, but a couple other guys to talk about. Bryce Harper continuing to play elite baseball. He has a top 10 OPS in baseball, 938 OPS. This is good stuff. 281, ooh, 376 on base, 562 slugging percentage. That's the big number for Bryce Harper, that slugging percentage. And right now, a career low strikeout rate of 15%. I mean, this is also, you're looking why Marsh is playing so well and why Harper's hitting so well. The strikeouts for both are way, way down, just making a ton more hard contact. He also has his highest walk rate right now since 2023 of 13.9%. And friend of the podcast, Luke Arcaney, noted on Twitter that there is a chance that Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper could both hit their 400th career home runs this season. Harper is at 373. He needs 27 more. Schwarber is at 355. He needs 45 more. So I guess the question is, A, do you think either will get there this season? And B or two? What did I say? A or one? It doesn't matter. Question the second, who will get there first? Liz, take a crack at these. Will either of these guys get to 400 this year? 27 for Harper, 45 more bombs for Schwarber, and if so, who will get there first?
So let's see. Harper, if he hits 35, you said?
No, he needs 27 more, so he has 10. More, that would mean he finishes 10. With 37 home runs this season.
That's where I was trying to get, and I guess the math was too complex for me. I think he could certainly hit that many home runs. I think it's a lot for him, but I
that
think
would
he'll
be the second most in his career, just so you know. That would be the most in his career was 42 in 2015 when he won the MVP award. This would be second highest only to that.
Schwarber would have to hit over 60.
It'd be 61. Total. 61 home runs for Schwarber this year to get to 400.
Total, if he were to hit another 45. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. Like, I think for both of these guys, it's entirely possible and within their skill set. You know, they can certainly do it. Whether they will, I'm not sure. I think probably Schwarber will get the closest.
Okay.
Even though Schwarber's he's got more closer. Home runs to go.
What percentage chance do you give Harper of getting to 37? What percentage chance do you give of Schwarber getting to 61?
Wow. I would give... I'd probably give Schwarber like a 40 to 50% chance of hitting 60. I think he's got a good chance of doing it because he's at a good rate now. I would give Harper probably like a 25 to 30% chance of getting there.
Okay.
I don't know if he's got like another 27 homers in him. That's a lot. And yet 45 is not quite as much for Schwarber, I guess.
I guess. That's right. That's the argument.
That's where I was landing on. It was like the worm in my brain was like, yeah, I know Schwarber's further away, but it almost feels more likely that this specific statistic is his forte and he's going to be able to just do a lot more in that column than Harper, who perhaps is going to continue playing well but not have as many home runs. But all that said... Harper's been a little bit of a hole for a while before this, and now we're seeing him play at a level that I want to say on the record as well is elite. You are playing like an elite player, so anybody who was hoping to see that again should feel fulfilled. And that being said, this is a great opportunity to buy in. And I'll buy in on like this version of Bryce Harper being like, yeah, you know, I'm in my groove and I'm playing like this. So I want to get on board here. I want to give him like a greater percentage than I may have given him a couple months ago and certainly last year. So I'll put him at like 60, 70%. at hitting 400 home runs, because I want to buy into this hot streak he's on right now and believe that it's not a hot streak, that it's actually closer to his typical output. I'm gonna trust you, Bryce. You wanted to be elite. You've reached that level. Let's stay here. I'll believe in you. Why not?
Okay.
Yeah.
I also believe, I think Harper has the better chance. I think as hot as Schwarber was last year, he still didn't even manage to clear Ryan Howard's 58. So I think 61 is, that's a lot. I mean, there are the number of guys in this league who've hit 60 plus home runs is a small elite group. So I think Schwarber gets close to what he got last year. I think he's in the upper 50s. I think there's a great chance he could break Howard's single season record for the Phillies. I think there's probably like a 10% chance Schwarber gets to 61. I think with Harper, yeah, I'm kind of believing what I'm seeing here. I'm seeing better plate discipline. He's seeing like a record few fastballs.
Oh, so by the way, sorry to cut you off, but I wanted to add to your strikeouts. Like, that is a huge theme here, how few strikeouts. He struck out once in the last 8 games. He's struck out 4 times in the month of May.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
So that tells you how locked in he is. Yeah.
He's legit. That's legitimately elite. That is.
Yeah.
That's MVP style play. And the fact, like, I was surprised to see his batting average at 281. I'm like, whoa, that's much higher than it was the last time I checked. And I'm like, he's in it. He's doing the Bryce Harper thing that we've wanted to see for a couple of years. And it's really cool. It's awesome to see him play at that level again.
Yeah, it truly is.
Seeing him trying to swing his way out of a slump, he racks up the strikeouts, I think, pretty quickly. And then when he starts making solid contact again, part of it is there's a natural decline in his strikeouts. However, this is beyond even that. This has more to do with approach and mental stuff coming up to the plate to be dropping off this steady rate. And part of the reason I'm willing to hitch my wagon to him in this particular case is that Schwarber's going to hit 400 home runs in his career. May not be this year, but he's going to do it. I think Harper's more motivated to hit like that this season. So I think that alone could give him the edge.
Yeah. And I think for Harper, I probably put it at, I think the odds are better that he doesn't get to 400, but I put it at like 40% chance, 40 to 45%.
We're still talking about this in like August though.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 I think for sure, because I think the signs you're seeing from him are real. He doesn't need a bona fide cleanup hitter behind him in order to excel, in order to be an elite hitter. I think we are seeing that. He is taking what the opposing pitchers are giving him and killing every mistake right now, which is something he didn't do as much of last year. And at the very, very start of this year, he's doing it now. And so great stuff. Great to see from Bryce Harper. It is elite MVP level type stuff. He dug himself a hole in terms of wins above replacement early in the season, but he's digging himself out of that. He's playing at an all-star level. We were wondering which lone all-star the Phillies would have when Rob Thompson was getting fired. And now all of a sudden you've got a number of guys who are starting to play at that level and starting to put up numbers where you're going to have to, if they continue playing like this up through early July, you'll have to consider them. But we're still a long ways away from that. Haven't talked at all about the pitching yet so far here. Oh, one more thing on the offense. Justin Crawford. Clutch dude. I mean, he's had his ups and downs offensively, but and again, I don't know what impact he's going to have with this team long term, but 2 walk-off hits so far already this season. And then his first home run in his career is a game-tying 2-run home run in the bottom of the 8th inning on Friday, helping the Phillies come all the way back from 7-2 in the 8th to tie the game at 7. He may not ever be an all-star, but what I like about Justin Crawford is he seems like the kind of guy that you want to have up in that kind of a situation, because I think at the very least you get a really good feeling he's going to put the ball in play somewhere. Like if you've got a runner on third and less than 2 outs, he may be one of the guys I want up there most in that situation, because I feel like he has maybe the best ability of anyone on the team to put the ball in play someplace. And in dramatic fashion, he's already done it 3 times so far this year.
And you know what? Even if he drives the ball straight into the plate and it bounces 20 feet into the air, he's got a really good chance with his makeup of turning that into something. So just putting the ball in play at all, it doesn't have to go out of the stadium, and it rarely will with him. But that's part of the value. He's also just got that Bryson Stadion stone-faced assuredness as a young player. Total comfort, it feels like, at the plate. Not really unnerved by what he's looking at. Even in how he moves, it feels like he just, you know, that's just how he showed up.
It was just to say, it's a confidence that he has.
It doesn't last forever, but it's a great look for a rookie. Running around the bases after that home run. Yeah, you think about Chase Utley hitting that grand slam and going a full sprint around the bases. And Crawford was just like, I did it and I'll do it again. And you're like, okay, cool.
Okay, we're with you.
Yeah, that was encouraging.
We like this story.
Yeah, that was very, very encouraging. Real quick on the pitching, Christopher Sanchez continuing to do Chris Sanchez stuff. He has now racked up 20 2/3 innings of scoreless pitching. That's the second longest streak by a pitcher in the majors this year. Only Jose Soriano at 25 2/3 innings has had a longer scoreless streak. It's the longest streak by any Philly since Zach Wheeler went 25 2/3 innings without giving up a run last season. On Sunday, he went 7 innings, 6 hits, no runs, no walks, 7 strikeouts. His ERA now down to 2.11 on the season. I don't really know what else there is to say about Chris Sanchez other than legit, for real, all the stuff, Liz. I mean, just all the stuff about Chris Sanchez. This is your ace. I mean, showing it again. Just amazing stuff from him.
People were worried, and we were telling them to calm down because it was just a couple of things. I feel like Philadelphia fans worry maybe a little bit more than others that what they're seeing from one of their favorite players is a mirage. You know, like what they're seeing is this is not actually happening. But this, you know, this is actually happening. Like Chris Sanchez is this good and he's now stayed this good for a number of seasons. We don't have to worry about it disappearing anymore. So I think that will help when the offense inevitably hits another skid. To be like, no, even if he has a tough start during this, the real Chris Sanchez is still in there. Yeah. And we don't have to worry about him, you know, all of a sudden turning into Taijuan Walker.
This team wins when its starting pitching performs well. And this team wins easily when its starting pitching performs as well as Christopher Sanchez can pitch. All you should have to do to show how good your ace is point at him. And that's all you got to do with Sanchez. Like that's, and as far as like him keeping those numbers up, that's going to be a huge deal for this team moving forward. That the 10 losses, like all that stuff, that comes from a lack of reliability on any aspect of your team. And this team is built to rely on its starting rotation. And when they're inconsistent and faulty and giving up tons of runs, then things get really messy in a hurry. But you're seeing some really clean, dominant starts, and that's what this team needs to win. And that's why they've been winning.
And then, you know, just a couple of things that did not go as well this weekend. There's no in-between with Jesus Luzardo, guys. There's very little middle ground with Jesus Luzardo. He's either throwing 7 shutout innings with 10 strikeouts and no walks, or he's having the kind of night that he had on Friday night. On Jesus Luzardo jersey night for the kids, Jesus Luzardo was kind of pitching like a little leaguer. He entered his start on Friday with no walks allowed in his 3 previous starts and then walked the leadoff hitter, walked a number of hitters in that game, never had it together, in that contest. And it's just baffling. Like his stuff has looked great this year, but his ERA is way over 5. And I see all these things online, like there's like mechanical things he's doing, like he's not accessing this shoulder muscle in order to get a full extension on his fastball. And like, I don't know. I never know how much of that silliness to believe. Maybe I'm sure there's a lot to some of it. I'm just not sure amateur Twitter is the place I'm going to get that kind of detailed information. He just didn't have location. He just didn't have his command on Friday. And it feels like that's really come and gone a lot so far this season for him. Like, I mean, he's pitching, and then Aaron Nola on Saturday had a similar outing. He managed to limit the damage, but couldn't make it through 5 innings in a game the Phillies were in control of most of the way. Couldn't get the win on Saturday because he was approaching 100 pitches and just couldn't get that third out in the 5th inning. So a couple of guys, little rickety here against the Rockies. On Friday, they weren't able to overcome it. Saturday, they were.
Did you literally ask the question, is Jesus Luzardo the new Aaron Nola? Is that...
I think we all know that... the answer. That's the problem.
It was the first thing on my mind, but we started talking about Luzardo. I'm just like, who's going to be the first to compare him to Aaron Nola?
Well, to be clear,
no, I'm not.
I am not. No. And I think that is dead wrong.
Completely.
Luzardo gives up 8 runs in the first 2 innings and the Phillies lose. Luzardo throws 8 shutout innings, gives up 3 hits. The Phillies win. In this way, he is almost, given what's happened with this rotation, one of the more reliable arms. And that at least you know there's one of 2 outcomes instead of a scattershot of nonsense.
Yeah.
On the day after the Phillies win a miraculous comeback, feel good, walk off, Nola will come out and for like a Sunday matinee game and give up 2 homers in the first and the Phillies never recover. Or the Phillies go up 6-0 in the first and Nola gives up 4 and then 3 in the second. Or the Phillies win the first 3 of a 4-game set and then they're facing like the other team's ace in the fourth game and you're like, yeah, I mean, it's a getaway day. We probably lose this game. And then that's the day Nola throws 7 innings of 2-hit ball. That's the Aaron Nola experience. The Jesus Luzardo experience is far more just like polarizing and direct. Whereas Aaron Nola will give up he won't give up 8 runs in an inning the way Luzardo will just get shelled. But Nola will give up like the 3 worst runs you have ever seen. The most infuriating 2 runs right when the Phillies needed him to not do that. It's a very particular brand of pitching that Aaron Nola brings. And Jesus Luzardo does not do the same thing.
Well, let's finish up here looking ahead at the rest of the week. The Phillies now travel to Boston. They have an off day on Monday as we're recording this. And we'll take on the Boston Red Sox for 3 games in Fenway. Old pal Ranger Suarez will get the start against the Phillies.
That was going to be my final thought. Well, I'm waiting.
I'll turn it over to you in just a second. But yes, that's where they're headed to next. The Red Sox just lost 2 out of 3 to the Tampa Bay Rays. The Phillies at 19-22, tied with the Marlins and the Nationals in the National League East. Those New York Metropolitans at 15-25, everybody. They're a good 3.5 games behind them. But the Phillies still trail the Braves by 9 games in the National League East. Still very early, of course, in the early going of this season. All right, final thoughts. Justin, talk about Ranger.
Oh, no, I was just going to mention that the Phillies will be running into Ranger when they go up to Boston. And until just now when I checked again, before the show started, he was the only pitcher listed among the probable pitchers. Boston was going TBD for everybody else. It felt like they were being sure, like, yeah, we're going to put your boy out there and you're going to have to look at him. That's going to be part of this. But Sonny Gray is now listed as the starter for game 2 as well. I did just want to kind of read off. We were reading some Philly stats from the month of May, which is a great way to talk about how well some of these guys have been playing. It's also a great way to like squeeze their great stats into a smaller sample size so that they look bigger. But because of that, it's also fun to look at Mets stats for the month of May so that I can tell you that Bo Bichette, Brett Beatty, Juan Soto, Tyrone Taylor, all hitting well under 200 for the month of May. And those are the kind of stats you look at and celebrate players for, well, then you would say that the Mets' best hitters are Francisco Alvarez and Carson Benj, both of who are players the Mets fans would tell you are not their best players. So, things are going remarkably, wonderfully terrible for the New York Mets. And that is also great to see that continue as the Phillies have some kind of bounce back here.
All just beautiful stuff. Beautiful stuff. Liz, final thoughts.
My final thought was also about the Mets, a little less in depth. But my favorite thing right now is that the Mets have the worst record in baseball.
Oof.
I mean, by 1 game. But I'll also say, like, teams, like, there's a lot less of like even the Rockies are doing decently. Like, there are no outliers that are doing really, really badly. And that includes the Mets with their, again, worst record in baseball. They have they've won 15 games and lost 25. That's 25 games, almost an entire month's worth of games they've lost in the first, 7 weeks of the season?
Yeah.
8, you know? That's
it's a lot.
That's a lot. It's not a great time to be a Mets fan. Oh, no.
Maybe the I don't know what the numbers are on this, but maybe the Phillies, I feel like we should look at the stats on how their numbers change at the point of the season where they become the only team that is active, which they just did, as the Flyers and Sixers were both dismissively wiped out of their playoffs with very little fanfare. And now the Phillies, it's just the Phillies for the rest of the, for until training camp for the Eagles opens. It's just the Phillies. They get their run at the city, and hey, I mean, they're using the opportunity in the spotlight.
They strapped the cape on as soon as Don Mattingly arrived, and they are ready to rescue the city. And so that's what we've got here over the next couple of months until, you're right, training camp opens up for the Eagles, which will have its own set of issues. I mean, there's a lot going on there, too. But with the best manager in baseball guiding them right now, the Philadelphia Phillies are on their way to race back to the top of the National League East by the time it's all over. So that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. Want to encourage everybody to, if you like to watch your podcasts, we have every roundtable episode of Hittin' Season up on the WHYY YouTube channel. So go over there, subscribe to the channel, and then you can get every Hittin' Season episode on your phone, your tablet, your smart TV, however you like to watch us. If you're an audio podcast fan, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. And now that the Phillies are on this roll, if you've been hesitant towards telling people about listening to a Phillies podcast, fear no more. Point them our direction. Tell them about the Hittin' Season. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. And if you want to send us an email, it's hittinseason@billypenn.com. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.